This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, which teams in college football are at a crossroads this year? Plus, the latest with Deshaun Watson ahead of his hearing tomorrow at the NFL. The SEC continues to dominate. And also, an interesting pizza delivery. We'll get to that coming up on the Morrow Midday Show. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch you on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And the podcasts are also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page and find the show podcasted there. While there, you can also leave a comment for the show. charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page. You can always get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Text the show 843-608-1734 or give us a call 843-721-9500. Join the conversation on the phones. Last hour, we were talking about if we could pair a couple of athletes together in a fight. On the text line, somebody said Ray Lewis and Brian Urlacher.
That'd be good.
I did think of Ray Lewis. I didn't say it, but that was a thought. Urlacher? Seems like he'd be solid. Although, I tell you what, I don't know. Urlacher nowadays, like he got the hair plugs. In his retirement, he looks like he's living more of a, I don't know what the term is. Yeah, he's not as intimidating, though, now.
No, Ray Lewis looks like he could probably still strap it up and go play for the Ravens.
Yeah, absolutely. Urlacher? Yeah, Urlacher in his prime? Okay, sure. Urlacher today? Not so much.
Ed Reed versus somebody? That might be a good one.
That'd be good.
So just take the whole old Miami team and throw them out there together. See what happens.
That's true. Yeah, I was going to say, Ray Lewis, take two Ravens. Ray Lewis and now I just drew a blank on his name. The other line. Terrell Suggs. Ray Lewis and Terrell Suggs, yeah.
Oof.
Although, that may be two on the nose because both of them have something in their own personal lives that, that weren't great. More so, especially Terrell Suggs. Ray Lewis, the details are a little more sketchy. Terrell Suggs was pretty horrendous. Anyways, I used to love Celebrity Deathmatch, so something. Bring back that show and let's put these fights together and figure out what would happen. We'll get to Ole Miss and their national championship coming up in a few moments. Circle back to that because the SEC continues to dominate. But while we're talking about baseball, last hour during Trent's Takes, we referenced that brawl yesterday between the Mariners and the Angels. And as far as baseball fights go, it was pretty good. I liked it. Usually it's very disappointing. I also love that one of the videos that came out was Noah Syndergaard fixing his hair during the fight. Classic Noah Syndergaard seems to be more concerned with how he looks than the actual performance on the field. Goes out there and works out with the shirt off. Like, come on. What are we doing here? Calls himself Thor. Anyways, I digress. But it was a pretty good fight. So then I saw this on Twitter afterwards. The Mariners fans are really happy. Mariners fans do not like the Angels very much. And I guess, I watched a lot of baseball this weekend. I don't know if anybody was paying attention or realized, but as I said going in, I thought there were some good series this weekend. I thought there was some good baseball. The Braves-Dodgers was a lot of fun. I know the Dodgers took 2 out of 3, but they were good games and good crowds. It felt like playoff baseball. Watched a lot of the Yankees-Astros. It's unbelievable the Yankees even won 2 of those games. Dusty Baker, I've always thought, is a pretty overrated manager. And both times, you had a base open with Aaron Judge at the plate, who's going to set records this year, and you pitched to him. I don't know why, and he delivered a walk-off both yesterday and Thursday, especially yesterday after they were getting no hit. I will circle back to that game in just a moment, or even from Saturday's game. But Yankees-Astros, a lot of fun. Sounded like playoff baseball. Packed crowds in the Bronx. They were going crazy. It was a lot of fun. I did not watch, however, a lot of Angels-Mariners this weekend, but I guess there was, typically is the case, there was some bad blood leading up to it. Guys were hit over the weekend, getting hit with pitches. Winker got hit on Sunday. He was the latest one. And, it led to this brawl. So Mariners fans were happy to see Winker and the Mariners start something, try to get back at those pesky Angels. So this Mariners fan on Twitter, her name is Sophie, and she posted a screenshot and said, I just ordered a pizza for Jesse Winker from Mountain Mike's Pizza in Anaheim. You deserve it, big guy. And she tweeted it at the Mariners. And she has the screenshot, and in the screenshot, the address is the stadium, and the details say, this is for the visitors' clubhouse. Pizza's for Jesse Winker. Now, if you get this delivery as a driver, you probably have no idea like what this even means. Obviously, if you're a baseball fan, you may understand. But a lot of people see that and like they don't really understand. They're going to a Major League Baseball stadium. They have to try to get this pizza in the visitors' locker room for Jesse Winker, who, of course, got thrown out of the game. So he's hanging out in the locker room until the end of the game, and the Mariners will then leave town. She then updated. It was a whole Twitter thread, and she was updating it. And a few minutes later, she tweeted that the Dasher, this was through DoorDash, that the Dasher is on the way. She then got a text from the driver who said, I am your DoorDash driver. I am on your way. She followed up and said, when you get to the stadium, please take the pizza to any gate and tell them it's for the visitors' clubhouse. The pizza is for Jesse Winker. Again, like, you know, I worked at baseball stadiums if somebody showed up at the gate and said, like, this pizza is for Jesse, they'd be like, what are you talking about? Get out of here. And the driver said, oh, okay, Sophie. Sure, I will let them know. Like, it's so simple. Hey, by the way, this is for Jesse Winker. Can you go bring this into the visitors clubhouse? Right, they got tight security. Another update about him getting closer. Another update of him arriving at the stadium. She's live tweeting the whole event, wondering if it's actually going to pan out, if the pizza will actually end up with Jesse Winker. Another update that he's at gate 6 of the stadium. And then she got confirmation that it was delivered. He texted her and said, your pizza is delivered. I'm sorry for the delay. It's actually very busy and hard to find parking here. Yeah, it's a Major League Baseball stadium. She responded and said, you are amazing. Do you have Venmo or Cash App? There are a lot of people waiting to tip you. Anyways, the story goes on that Jesse Winker reached out to this woman, said, I got the pizza. Thank you. I appreciate it a lot. Sophie, the Mariners fan, responded and said, thank you for being awesome. There's a ton of people on Twitter who love you right now. All for starting this this brawl. Then she got the phone number of the delivery driver as well. And I'm sorry, I'm probably going to butcher his name, but just going off of how it looks, I would say Simranjeet is the driver.
Checks out.
That's my best guess. Anyway, she got his number. She was texting with him. They had a 12-minute conversation. His wife started like a Twitter account yesterday just to respond to everybody online who appreciated this guy. All these Mariners fans were donating to like a GoFundMe or Venmoing them money and everything for this. And then C. Trent Rosencrantz, who covers, he used to cover the Reds, but Jesse Winker came from the Reds. He said, I have confirmed that not only did Jesse Winker get the pizza, he also said it was really good. So that's a nice little story to come out of all this.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised. When I saw her first tweet, I thought, this is ridiculous. What is this person doing? And putting it on Twitter. Like, why are you trying to send a pizza to Jesse Winker in the visitors' clubhouse?
The Dasher would have probably just ate it.
Yeah, right.
No, more normally, knowing some of the Dashers out there.
They do say, I forget what it was, like 35% of drivers do eat some of your food. I think it's even higher, but I remember we talked about that study on the show years ago when I first came across that.
I've had a couple missing mozzarella sticks here and there.
I saw a bite in one of my pizza slices. I'm shocked the pizza actually got to Jesse Winker in this case. Now, if a pizza shows up for you, put yourself in this situation. You're hanging out in the clubhouse. Mm. You're on the road. You just got kicked out for starting a fight for going after the Angels.
Right.
Now, suddenly, there's a knock on the clubhouse door. They say, hey, somebody brought you this pizza. You're on the road. It's not Seattle. You're not in the comfy confines of your home stadium. You just started a fight on the road. Are you skeptical of this pizza that shows up for you delivered to the visitor's clubhouse?
1,000%. Yeah. I mean, first of all, I'd like the security team to take a, look at themselves to just let a pizza come through without, maybe checking it, making sure there wasn't any, suspicious activity going on with this pizza. I think that addressed that first. And no, I probably wouldn't have touched the pizza. Unless, like, she did a good job by like live tweeting it, tagging the Mariners and everything. So I'm sure the social media manager came over and said,
That's true.
You know, this is going on right now. Somebody's trying to bring you a pizza. But no, I'd be very skeptical. It's like, you know, Jordan, what happened to the pizza with him that made him sick?
You know,
a couple nights before the game.
That's true. Yeah, he was on the road. Yeah, you got to watch out for those people in Utah trying to poison Michael Jordan.
So they say. That's why he was sick.
Yeah, right. Had nothing to do with all the booze and staying up all night. But, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Even if I know this story and I know it's from her, I mean, I guess if I know it's from her, that's just weird. I don't, the whole idea of accepting food from, you just don't know where it's been. I don't know. I know it's a pizza that's being delivered. If I'm Jesse Winker and a pizza shows up to the clubhouse, I don't know if I'm digging in.
No, unless the team told you, like, hey, this is happening. It's a Mariners fan sending it over. That'd be the only thing.
Yeah, so she says. It's all a ploy just to get back at Jesse Winker.
It's a fake Twitter account.
That's right. But it all's well that ends well. So he gets a pizza out of it. The Mariner fan gets her pizza delivered, and the delivery driver for doing the job, he got all sorts of money out of it. Mariner fan sending him extra tips for doing the job. So that's pretty good. You're driving around, you're door dashing. Little do you know, you're about to deliver a pizza to the stadium and make a good bit of money off of it. I wonder what he thought. I don't know based off of the messages, I don't think he seemed familiar with exactly what he was like getting himself into. I wonder what he thought when he showed up to the stadium. A lot of times, I think delivery people will be put out when they show up and it's like gate six, where you got to go? People, I'm sure the security is giving them a hard time at the stadium. You're just trying to deliver the pizza, do your job, and get out of there to the next delivery. But it worked out for everybody involved. It's a happy ending to a funny story out of yesterday's brawl. Hey, also from the weekend, as I mentioned earlier, that Yankees-Astros series, I had a friend who was at the game on Saturday, Yankees-Astros. The Yankees got no hit by the Astros. And I had a buddy who's a Yankees fan who was at the game. It's historic. It's iconic. First time the Yankees were no hit in 20 years. Very infrequently do you see. I've been to a lot of games. I don't think I've ever come close to seeing a no-hitter as a fan. If you were, now you're a Giants fan, so let's say you're at a Giants game.
Ooh.
Because you're such a big Giants fan now.
My home stadium, yeah.
That's right. If the Giants are getting no hit and you're there in person, do you root for the history or do you root for your team?
I think it's blasphemy if you root for the history.
Oh.
I really do. I'm not a fan of, I want to see this happen. I want to see the perfect game happen. No, your team's losing, all right? Your team doesn't have a hit. How about cheer for, your team to maybe make a run? No, I don't like that. Let's cheer for the history. Yeah, screw that. What are we doing?
Okay, what about, in this case, it was the Yankees. They're on pace to have a record season.
Sure.
They're in first place. They're having a great year. Losing this one game in June is not going to keep them from winning the World Series. Can you, during a historic season, be willing to sacrifice one game over the course of a great year for history?
No, Luke, because I know the regular season is long in the MLB. Some say too long. I am on that path as well. But no, every win matters. Every win matters. I wouldn't cheer for another team that is beating the team that I love. That'd be like, if Georgia was beating, the life out of Florida in the Florida-Georgia game, and they were about to score 70 points, and nobody's ever scored 70 points in a Florida-Georgia game, so everybody cheer for Georgia. No. I mean, come on. What are we doing?
I am with you. If I was at a Fenway Park and the Red Sox were getting no hit, I've never seen a no-hitter. That would be like the consolation prize. I'd be rooting for the Red Sox to get a hit, if not win the game. But if they didn't, then got no hit, I would try to put the positive spin like, well, at least I saw history.
You wouldn't leave, though, right? Like,
no.
No.
No, you couldn't. Can't leave early. In fact, I'm big against leaving early, even if the game's out of hand. Yeah, because I went in with the plan of like, hey, I'm going to spend 3 hours at the ballpark.
That's a good point.
And I know traffic's a pain. But I go in expecting like I'm going to go to the game. It's probably going to be a pain getting to the stadium, getting away. You build that all in. And I spent money, so I'm going to get I'm going to stay here for the nine. How often do I get to go to a game? So I'm anti. And thankfully, I grew up. I did not have a father that was always like, all right, eighth inning, we got to hit the road. He didn't.
Right.
Right. He was fine. We sit in traffic. We get home late. He was fine with it. He had to get up for work. He was always cool with that. And I appreciate that. I'm a big stay-at-the-game type of guy. Don't leave early. Now, if you have season tickets and you're at every game, okay, a little different. I mean, how many games do you go to? You got to stay for the whole thing. The other thing to come out of the baseball weekend, other than Ole Miss's national championship, we'll get to that in just a moment. But there was this story written by The Star, the Toronto Star. And if you're unfamiliar, there's this guy, Zach Hampel, who is obsessed with catching foul balls and home run balls at baseball games. And the number is in this article. I have to find it. But he believes he has, like, some ridiculous amount of baseballs from over the years, from going to 32 games. He has 11,811 baseballs. It sounds phony. It's not. He's taken photos in his bathtub covered in the baseballs. You'll see videos of him at all these different stadiums. He's written a book on it. Zach Ample's his name. I usually refrain from name-calling, but this guy is a known loser. He pushes kids out of the way to get these foul balls and everything. He's just what's wrong with a lot of sports fans. And I can't stand seeing this guy at the ballpark all the time getting these stupid foul balls. But they did this article for the Star, and the whole idea was, do kids deserve a home run ball or a foul ball? If you're at a stadium and you catch a foul ball, do you have to give it to a kid that's sitting in your row, or can you just keep it for yourself even if you're an adult? And I do think it's a fair question because, like, I've never caught a foul ball or a home run ball. I think it'd be pretty cool if I caught a home run ball. I've never caught one before. But then I also think, yeah, what am I going to do with it? I'm a grown man. It means a lot more for that kid. I would also say you definitely have to give it to the kid if you, like, rob the ball from getting to the kid. If you're sitting right next to him and you reach up and you make the catch, right, you definitely got to give it to the kid. If you make a catch and there just happens to be a kid in your section, but he's like five rows behind you, all right, we could have a little bit more of a debate. But Zach Ample in this article gives some ridiculous quotes about there's no participation trophies. Kids have to learn that they need to earn things and hear no and yada, yada, yada. He said, I get a lot of grief for catching balls, even if I give them away. Oh, I love this quote from Zach Ample. It's absentee adult morons that don't understand how it works. So if he's going to name call, I got no problem calling him. If he's going to call people morons for thinking he should give the ball to a kid, this guy's a moron too. I can't stand this guy. He's at all these stupid stadiums pushing people out of the way to get his stupid foul ball. If you've never caught one before, it's a little bit different. When you're this dude that has 12,000, you give the baseball to the kid. What do you need it for? You're in your 30s, and he's got trash cans filled with baseballs. Anyways, all this is to say, Trent, if you're at a baseball game, you catch a foul ball, a home run ball, are you keeping it, or are you looking to give it to a kid nearby?
Give it to a child. I mean, what are we doing here? You grow up at some point. I know it's cool to catch the foul ball and everything, but like you said, this gentleman has, you know, 15,000, you know, foul and home run balls that he has, pushing kids out of the way, things of that nature. I will say, if there's no kids in your section and you catch it, maybe a different – I'm not walking over, you know, 107 when I'm in 109 just to go give a kid, you know, a foul ball. But if he's sitting right behind me and I catch it, yeah, I mean, right there. The little girl's trying to get it with her dad. Boom, throw it over to the little girl. Be respectful. They're children.
Yeah, it means more for them, and that's also how you grow the game. That's the – you know, they're going to remember that forever, going to the game and getting a ball. And that's what it's all about for these kids. They go with their father, and you have those memories of going to a game. I will say, if you've never caught one, though, and you've been going to games for you, I get if it's like the first time you ever catch a ball, maybe you feel like you want to keep it. But if you've caught one, if you're like this guy who has 12,000, absolutely give that ball away. Give it to the kid. I've never really come close. Well, I've told the story once. I had the foul ball that landed between my legs. Didn't get that one. Otherwise, I've never really come close to getting a foul ball. Sometimes in the broadcasting booth, you get a foul ball back, but that doesn't really count. I'm thinking of as a fan when you're in the crowd and somebody hits a ball your direction. But I'll also tell you that I would never even attempt to catch a ball. I'm going to break a finger. When I'm in the broadcast booth and a ball, I'm not trying to. I duck out of the way and I protect my laptop. So if I'm in the crowd and somebody hits a home run to me, that thing's screaming off the bat at like 105 miles an hour. Somebody else, you try to catch it. Let the little kid try to catch it. I'm moving out of the way. I'm not trying to catch those foul balls.
Oh, yeah, at a River Dogs game, a foul ball came to me. I didn't try to catch it. No, it hit like the seats in front of me. It ended up coming to me. But no, I'm not. I'm reaching out of the way, and I see grown mans with gloves.
Yeah,
they bring gloves and try to catch these balls. I'm like, what are we doing here, pal? You're not in the game. Come on, just go sit, have a beer, and enjoy, and let your kid run around.
Yeah, that's a big thing. People get mocked for bringing the gloves to a game.
If you're like under the age of 18, I'm cool with it. Like you can bring a glove, I don't care. But if you're 45, you got two kids sitting there, and you got a glove looking for every foul ball. I'm not having a beer with you. That's all I'll say.
Not a great look. I get it, because for the reasons I just said, it makes it a lot easier than trying to catch a bare hand. But what are the chances? How often do you actually get a ball hit your way? So you're going to lug around your old battered glove from your Little League days and carry it with you all around the stadium, and then you're going to sit there in your seat with the glove on. I'm with you. It's not a great look. Just like the wearing of a jersey. Now, I'm still a jersey guy. I'll wear jerseys. It does get a little weird when you get to a certain age where now you're wearing jerseys of guys that are like 10 years younger than you. You're much older than all the athletes. Where are you while we're on the topic here? We've gone down this road. This is even what I was planning on discussing here. But nonetheless, since we're here, where are you on adults, like grown men, going to a game in a jersey?
Yeah, you know, I got mixed feelings about it, definitely. If it's like a Legends jersey, maybe I'll understand it. But yeah, I mean, if you're wearing, you know, Mac Jones's jersey and you're a 65-year-old at a Patriots game, it rubs me, you know, a different way. It's kind of like face painting, too. I mean, what are we doing? You're 55. Like, you know, take the paint off your face and watch the game. That leave it to, you know, the younger generation to do that. Not a big jersey guy. I will say, though, baseball jerseys are great for, you know, you're talking about fashion, obviously, great for fashion. You can wear baseball jerseys, you know, and make them look presentable. And that's what I do for going to baseball games. I'll throw on, like, my Ole Miss baseball jersey or something. You can make it look good.
I'm with you. Yeah. I wore a baseball jersey. I was just having this conversation with some friends about a month ago. And they were saying, the baseball jersey. They said, how do you wear that? That's the worst. Baseball jerseys are the worst to wear. I said, what are you talking about? I think they're the most present. You can't go out in an NBA, a basketball jersey. And NFL jerseys, too, are too – baseball jersey is at least close enough to, like, actual clothes. You get away with it. And I think they're comfortable. The argument of my friends were saying, baseball jerseys are so uncomfortable. I think they're comfortable. You leave the top button or two unbuttoned. It's a breeze.
Oh, I leave all the buttons out. Wear the undershirt. And that's a great look. It's a great look, folks.
Yeah, I'm all for the baseball jersey. I was the minority, though, in this conversation last month. My buddies were all, how can you wear a baseball jersey?
What are you? What are your buddies wearing a football jersey out on a Thursday? Are we doing?
They don't wear any. They probably don't wear any jerseys at this point. I'm still a jersey guy. I got no problem with it. I'm all for it. Baseball jerseys look pretty cool too. Just I don't know. Probably don't put your name on the back. That's another one, right? You got like a grown man walking around with his own personalized jersey. Maybe you let that one go too. You can always join the conversation 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Rob is with us. Rob, what's going on? How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Doing well. What's up?
You completely stole my thunder there asking about the grown man wearing a jersey thing. That's 100% why I called in. I think they're really different for kids or for women. I think a grown man wearing another grown man's jersey, I think it's a bad look. Anytime, no matter what team, legend, whatever. I don't know about that. And also, I kind of got a chuckle out of the grown man taking the glove to the game. All I can think of is Jim Harbaugh. But you know, he's different. That's for sure. Y'all have a good one.
Hey, appreciate it, Rob. Harbaugh was a quarterback in his defense, right? So he's used to he doesn't have the hands to catch one, but yeah, it is classic Jim Harbaugh. And I know he's guilty of doing it, of showing up with the old glove. And you know, these gloves, they always show these people in the crowd. They got the old gloves from like when they were a kid. They're like 40-year-old gloves. They're all beat up. They look like they're being held together with bubble gum. It's not like they show up with some nice new mitt. They bring it out of the garage, their old glove. They try to relive, like, the glory days. They show up to the stadium with the glove on. They're even pounding the fist into the glove in between pitches. Like, all right, hit it this way.
But what's worse, if you go and buy a glove just to bring it to the ballpark or bring the glove that you've had? I feel like if you go and buy a new one just for that, if you're playing catch in your yard with your son, I get why you're going to buy a baseball glove. But if you're buying it solely to catch foul balls.
That's a good point. I didn't think of that. You're right. All right, I got to go to Dick's, get a new glove.
Just don't bring the glove. Like, regardless, don't bring the glove.
Yeah. Oh, you playing a men's league this year? You got to go get a new glove? No, I'm going about 10 Braves games this summer. I got to go pick up a new glove, new mitt to go to the games. That's true. You can't get a new glove just for the purpose of hoping to catch a foul ball. Good point. All right, so now that makes sense why these guys pull out the old battered mitt from their Little League days out of the storage closet and show up at Truist Park, go catch a foul ball from Freddie Freeman this past weekend with their old beat-up mitt. When we come back, since I teased it, Ole Miss won their first national championship. We talked about it earlier. You can find it on demand, but it's the dominance, the further dominance of the SEC, where they've taken over. They were already the best conference in football. Now they're taking over baseball. Basketball's been getting better, and it all starts with football, and it's the trickle-down effect. And it's like somebody who hits it big with an invention or a company, and now they got money to be able to invest in other companies and make even more money. The SEC was the best and still is the best football conference, leading them to be able to reinvest that money into these other conferences. And they had more teams in the field for the baseball tournament than any other conference. They had the second most teams in March Madness this past year. They've won three straight in baseball now from three different schools that don't really have that resume of winning. In fact, up until 12 years ago, the SEC had only two teams that ever won a national championship. Now they're winning all the national championships. And it's just furthering this monopoly of the SEC in college sports. As Ole Miss got their first national championship in baseball yesterday. Speaking of college sports, when we come back, which college football programs are at a crossroads? Which ones are arriving at that fork in the road? And which direction are they going to go? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Which college football teams are at a crossroads this upcoming year? They've reached the fork in the road, and it's important that they choose the right path down said road to get to the proper destination. We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If we were to go conference by conference, and I were to pick one team from each conference, in the Big Ten, I think it's certainly Nebraska, right? Scott Frost is on the hot seat. And Nebraska is one of those teams that everybody is hyping them up. I heard Brad Powers from Covers.com. He's big in the betting world of college football. They power ranked Nebraska at the end of last year as the number 30 team in all of college football, the 30th best team in college football, yet they were 3-9. Because as we continue to regurgitate, you know, all their losses were by single digits. All but one was by a touchdown or less. Half of them were to ranked teams. They played as good as you can for a 3-9 team. They were a lot better than the record indicated. However, eventually, you have to turn those into wins. It's only going to get you so far. And Nebraska has been poor in one-possession games under Scott Frost, and that's the big kicker. Scott Frost had to get rid of his entire staff. So what comes next? The head coach. He's coaching for his job this year. So for Nebraska, you got to turn it around. You got to turn these close games into wins. And if you don't, there's going to be a coaching change. So certainly in the Big Ten, it's Nebraska that's at that fork in the road. And if they take the wrong turn and go down the wrong path, they'll have a coaching change this year, I would imagine. If they go down the right path, you turn some of those close games into some wins, you're far more competitive in the Big Ten this year. Out in the Pac-12, I'd probably say, I think you could go Arizona State with Herm Edwards. I mean, they have some issues off the field that we're still waiting on the outcome. They lost some coaches, and Herm just hasn't been great at Arizona State. And I thought last year was a little disappointing for them. So Arizona State is a good candidate, and UCLA may be another one as well in that Chip Kelly has been here for 5 years at UCLA. Many believe that they'll probably have their best year yet underneath him, and hopefully they do. But you have this conference where USC, before they start to get going again, right? UCLA has a chance to maybe surprisingly put themselves in the race there in the Pac-12. Otherwise, you know, I mean, Chip, at a certain point, you'll be talking about him costing himself his job as well. In the Big 12, I would say maybe Matt Campbell with Iowa State. I mean, a year ago, we were talking about Matt Campbell going to the NFL and Iowa State as a playoff team, and they were a real big disappointment last year. They were right there at Clemson, and that's why I thought it was fitting that the two played in their bowl game. They played against one another. But Iowa State was right there as one of the bigger disappointments in college football. People were picking them to be a playoff team. They were never even in the conversation. Then they lose their first game of the year. It's like, all right, well, that's it for Iowa State. They were a huge bust a year ago. And everyone was saying, right, Matt Campbell, he's the next big star. The Lions wanted to hire him. His stock has really dropped. Now, I don't think he'd lose his job after this year because he's really beloved there. And it's one of those things where Matt Campbell is, like, really liked in football circles. And Kyrie Irving's kind of the same thing. We were talking about him earlier in basketball. Like, if you talk to any of the players, they'll speak highly of Kyrie Irving. It's one of those things like, oh, you don't get it. Because right, you're not a player. It's the same idea with Matt Campbell. Like, those in the basketball or in the football world talk about, like, this guy's a great coach. Yeah, but we're not really seeing the results. Oh, you don't get it. If only you knew what it was like. Right, Matt Campbell. Well, I kind of have to see it for Iowa State. And if they continue to move in that wrong direction where 12 months ago, they were picked to be a playoff team by many. They were 500 last year. If they have another similar season or worst-case scenario, they're worse this year. Like, all right, we're really moving in the wrong direction. And I know Iowa State doesn't have a rich football tradition. But nonetheless, when you have those high hopes and expectations and you face plant, you bottom out like this. I could say Iowa State, but I probably actually, if I was choosing one team in the Big 12, I'd probably say Texas. Now, I know it's only year two of Steve Sarkisian. I don't think he's on the hot seat this year. But Texas, they were 5-7 a year ago. Not great. Didn't go to a bowl game. Now you bring in Quinn Ewers. You have the excitement of Arch Manning, even if he's not going to be there this year. And you have the fact that Texas has the second-best odds to win the conference. I think Texas and USC are both a little overvalued right now, but the hype is real around the Longhorns. And you expect Quinn Ewers to have a pretty good year. So the reason why I think they're at that fork in the road is because you were just 5-7 last year. Are you going to go down that path again? Are we going to have another disappointing season? Is Texas only going to be 500? Or is Ewers going to be the real deal? And this offense could be prolific, and you could win the Big 12, and you go down the other road at that fork. Last year, you were 5-7. Now you really do improve, take a big step forward, and here comes Arch Manning as well. It changes everything for that program. Right? If Ewers has a good year and they win some games, now Arch Manning's come in, and you got two talented quarterbacks to choose from, and you had a much improved season, and you imagine year two of Sarkisian will be better than year one. So I say Texas early on in the Sarkisian tenure, because we know they're not very patient there with that program. Then we get to the two conferences maybe you care about most, the ACC and, of course, the SEC. First in the SEC, I would say Missouri would be a team that's at the crossroads. If I think, personally, Eli Drinkwitz, I don't think there's a lot of coaches in the SEC on the hot seat because we just had quite a few turnover, quite a bit of turnover. But the one coach I would say could be Drinkwitz at Missouri. Had a good first year, took a big step back last year, and we'll see how they do this season. But I think the grabbier headline, the team that more so is at that fork in the road, is Texas A&M. Now, I don't think Jimbo Fisher is going to lose his job this year. But after everything that's transpired, first they got close to making it to the playoff 2 years ago. Then last year they beat Alabama. Then they bring in the best recruiting class we've ever seen. Then you have the sparring of words between Jimbo and Saban, and they're going to meet early on in the season in October. And all the while, we're still waiting for Texas A&M to kind of reach their potential and finally make the playoff for the first time. So which direction are they going to go in? They're at that fork in the road. They've been sitting there for a while. But are they finally going to break through? Is this the year that Texas A&M will finally compete at the top of the SEC, potentially be a playoff team? Or are they going to get embarrassed by Alabama? Are they going to lose a couple games in conference? Right, last year, they were 500 in the SEC. Are we looking at something similar this year? Remember, they lost their defensive coordinator, who I thought was the most important part of that team last year, or the past couple years during this success. And Jimbo's the offensive guy. The offense was not very good last year. So Texas A&M, I think, is the team in the SEC most at the crossroads. The other ones, you know, Kentucky's fine. You have South Carolina brought in Spencer Rattler, so they're hopeful, and they're still building. Florida just brought in a new coach. LSU just brought in a new coach. Arkansas and Ole Miss are doing just fine right now. Then lastly, you get to the ACC. Now, I think in the ACC, we can make the case for more teams than any other conference. I think Louisville is certainly at that fork in the road where I think Louisville needs a good year out of Scott Satterfield. Otherwise, he's probably gone. I think Syracuse, if you want to say Syracuse, they never have high hopes or expectations, but I think Dino Babers is coaching for his job. You can make the case for Mike Norvell at Florida State needs to really show a big step forward this year. I don't know if he'd lose his job this year. He hasn't been on the job that long. But boy, would the pressure ramp up. I would say even NC State, could they realistically win the conference? Or are they going to take a step back from a year ago? And that's just the Atlantic Division. And that's also excluding Clemson. We'll circle back to them in just a moment. In the Coastal Division, I think UNC. I mean, talk about disappointments. Mack Brown should be on the hot seat. I don't know if he is. They love him there. That's why they brought him back. But they've been hugely underwhelming his first 3 years. You could even I would even make an argument for Pittsburgh. How do they follow up after winning the conference last year? Do they continue to ascend, or do they kind of fall back to earth with a reality check this year without Kenny Pickett? But I do think that the team of most interest that's at that fork in the road is Clemson. I think Clemson is the most interesting team in college football because we're wondering, was last year the outlier? Will they just get right back to where they were competing for national championships, or is this, to borrow a now overused phrase, the new normal? Right? Is this just what it's going to be now, where they're in the same boat as some other teams in the ACC trying to earn their spot back into the playoff every once in a while? And if Clemson strings together back-to-back disappointing seasons, you're heading down that path of like, oh, this is just kind of the new reality. But I also think the reason why Clemson is so interesting in this sense is because a lot of these other teams I mentioned, they have coaches who are coaching for their job, whether it's Nebraska, whether it's maybe a Missouri. The pressure would certainly ramp up on Jimbo. It would ramp up for Chip Kelly, right? A Matt Campbell, Steve Sarkisian. If they don't lose their jobs yet, they'd be moving in that direction. In the ACC, if Louisville doesn't have a good year, maybe they make a change. Syracuse, if they don't have a good year, I would imagine they make a change. Some of these other schools as well. But for Clemson, I mean, Dabo, you're not talking about that. He's got the job security. And he's so unique in the sense that he is one of the more accomplished coaches we have in college football, and yet there's still that sense that he has to prove something. Usually we don't say that about coaches who have accomplished what Dabo has. But there's still the feeling for Clemson that they still have something to prove this year, which is why I think they're the most interesting team in college football heading into this year. What are we going to get out of them? I think they're at that fork in the road as well. And last year may have just been a blip where you missed your turn. All right, no problem. We'll take the next exit. We'll circle back on track. We're all good. And it just cost us a little time, a little bit of a delay. Just like last year, right? Just a little delay. Now we're back. Almost like the Golden State Warriors had two down years. They were injured. They were recovering. All right, now they're back to winning championships. You don't really worry about those 2 years when at one point they were the worst team in the league. Right, for Clemson, do they get right back to where they were, say, just 2 years ago? Or is this the path they're now heading down? They're at that fork in the road as well. Speaking of Clemson, when we come back, Deshaun Watson, former Clemson Tiger, will start his sit-down with the NFL tomorrow as we figure out what is going to come from all this. We'll touch on that when we come back, getting ready for the Deshaun Watson situation to move forward with the NFL tomorrow. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll get to the Deshaun Watson situation here in just a moment as he gets ready to meet with the NFL tomorrow. And hopefully we get some sort of outcome relatively quick in all this, right? Some sort of clarity in regards to the hearing with the NFL that begins tomorrow. But before we do so, we were talking last hour about like dream fights from athletes. Well, with a stroke of serendipity, TMZ is reporting that Adrian Peterson and Le'Veon Bell are currently in the process of putting together a boxing showdown that could happen next month. Adrian Peterson and Le'Veon Bell. Two guys that, their careers seem to be over. Could use some cash, I guess. Especially Adrian Peterson. He's had some issues in his personal life that he's needed some cash. AP, or really AD, was the real nickname, and Le'Veon Bell in a boxing ring. Who do you give the edge to, and would you be tuning in, Trent?
I won't buy the fight, but I'll look at the clips, no doubt. Now, I will say Le'Veon Bell, he's been out of football for the past couple of years and has been training in the boxing world. You know, I've seen a couple of videos of his training, and looks pretty good. His hands look pretty quick, but, I mean, all day, Adrian Peterson, you know, it's tough to bet against that guy in any situation. So we'll have to see. But right now, I'd maybe I'm leading towards Le'Veon Bell just because of the experience, but the strength of Adrian Peterson will probably overpower.
It's supposed to take place at the former Staples Center, now what, Crypto.com Arena? Oh,
good for them.
So, yeah, how about that? This is going to be a big event going on here. We'll see if it happens in about a month. Adrian Peterson against Le'Veon Bell. That'd be interesting. I also like that it's the same position group. You know, when we were talking earlier trying to pair guys together, that's like the ultimate test, too, of taking guys from the same position and see who the alpha is of running backs or linebackers or defensive backs, whatever it may be. On a more serious subject matter, we have Deshaun Watson, who will begin his hearing with the NFL tomorrow. Now, what I find interesting, I did not know this, I just learned this, that they tell you, they give you a 10-day heads up when it's going to begin. So Watson was told by the NFL 10 days prior to tomorrow. Then we know he settled 20 of the 24 cases last week. And at the time, we were talking about the timing, right? Why did this happen now? Well, maybe this is part of the thought that if he shows up at this hearing tomorrow, maybe it makes him look better to say, hey, you know, we settled 20 of those 24. The women were satisfied with the term, yada, yada, whatever, right? At least you get that off the books of potential lawsuits. But the timeline is interesting that reportedly he should have been told about this by the NFL just about 10 days ago. And within that window is when he settled a lot of these cases. Maybe that had to do with the timing leading up to the hearing with the NFL starting tomorrow. Here was Jeremy Fowler on ESPN talking about the latest with Deshaun and this upcoming hearing tomorrow with the NFL.
With the hearing coming Tuesday, VR Adam Schefter, that independent reviewer Sue L. Robinson will hear the Deshaun Watson case. That expedites the timeline on the NFL's potential ruling on Watson's discipline. Now, Robinson will hear the case from Watson, will also hear the case from the NFL, which is likely seeking a lengthy suspension for Watson. Now, the league has pretty much wrapped up its investigation at this point. I'm told it's been at it for 18 months. It's interviewed several of the plaintiffs. It's interviewed Watson. Could do some more background work, but pretty much it's ready for a ruling. So the hope from the league and from many people involved is that there is discipline handed out by training camp. Now, this is a new process with Sue L. Robinson. The NFL and the NFLPA jointly appointed her. Roger Goodell will not make the decision on the discipline. So she could take a few weeks to decide, could take a couple days. Either way, this is being close to wrapped up, and the players' union will have Watson's back here. They are expected to potentially appeal any ruling.
Will be interesting to see what transpires tomorrow and then moving forward with this hearing. According to reports, the NFL they're pushing for at minimum a year suspension, right? At least a full year suspension. And it'd be similar almost to like Calvin Ridley, who's suspended for at least a year, but then he has to try to get himself, he has to apply for reinstatement. So a lot of people saw that headline figure as just a year. Not necessarily, it could be more. And according to the reports, the phrasing they're using, same idea with the NFL, where it would be at least a year. And then you kind of go from there and see what the NFL decides and what happens in the next 12 months or 16 months and if more information comes out. But at least a year suspension for Deshaun, which, by the way, let's say that is the case. And then he comes back and plays in 2023. Now you'd be talking about 2 years off in the middle of the career, which would be interesting. You know, unions are good, obviously, for the members of the union, and they're going to fight for Deshaun. According to reports, the union are suggesting that Deshaun shouldn't be punished at all. And it's something I said last week. Like, they're going to be doing their job, but it is an interesting dynamic that they will have to defend these actions with the hope of being, no punishment. We know it's out there and everything, but I don't think Deshaun should actually be punished for any of this. He did his time last year when he was getting paid to not play just as he wanted. It'll be interesting to see how things go. I think maybe the best case or the best option of attack for the PA and all this is that you try to point to others in the NFL that got away without much of an issue. You know, it's that whataboutism, as they call it. Like, yeah, but what about Dan Snyder? Nothing's happened to Dan Snyder, and this is what he's been alleged to have done, yada, yada, yada. What about Robert Kraft? Right? Look at the punishment you gave Robert Kraft for his own issue, which is similar to Deshaun, at least in a similar ballpark. Right? And not much came from that, and that's what you could try to do. Jerry Jones has had some accusations, and you didn't punish him for a lot of these things. That may be the best case. You know, the old what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Like, you're not why are the players – why should Deshaun be treated differently than how you handled some of these situations with the owners? I would also say there is a difference between owners at the very top and then the players in this case that are lower on that totem pole when it comes to the NFL. But at least we're getting closer to some sort of end game, I would imagine, here with Deshaun, and we'll see how things go, starting with the hearing tomorrow with the NFL. I mean, it's about time. The Browns really aren't owed much because they put themselves in the situation, but, you know, we're about to head into July. Training camps are about to begin. It would be nice to have some clarity. And we'll see if we get some of that clarity starting tomorrow with the NFL hearing with Deshaun Watson. In the meantime, we will wrap up your Monday when we come back.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
The highest mountain. The jump off, nobody gonna know. Can't you see? Oh, can't you see?
Wrapping up your Monday and the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. And the podcasts are also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page and find the show there. Don't forget, you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And through the app, you can listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world as the podcasts are available there. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 12 different states and multiple countries on this Monday as we kick off another week, heading towards July, wrapping up June already. We broke down Freddie Freeman today and his emotional return. And boy, what a tough loss last night for the Braves. How do you lose that game? Also, Ole Miss getting that national championship. Deshaun Watson. Teams reaching that fork in the road in college football. The Hornets embarrassing themselves. And a whole lot more over the last few hours. Find it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston. However you listen to your podcast. Whenever you miss anything from the show. In the meantime, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. The Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.